Chapter 6. Final Gambit. The Naming of Names. Origin. Garrow swept his sword around in a shining arc of wicked steel, slashing open the writhing maggot creatures as they burst from the ground. Fanged maws dripped acidic venom, and those among Malkador's chosen who moved too slowly found themselves falling to savage, burning bites from the blind monstrosities. The legionary drew back, casting about the battle zone, catching sight of Helig Galor in the far distance, engaged in a fierce firefight against high odds. All around, the sky was smoky with the swarms of carrion flies, and their worm-like kindred were quickly overrunning everything on the ground. The remaining traitors, ragged and bloody in their corrupted warplate, moved in hectic, frenzied surges. So far, none of them had been able to reach the gates at the foot of the White Mountain, but it would only need one to make it through the gauntlet. Vox communications were useless, smothered by unknown jamming, thwarting any call for reinforcements. The same blanket of nullification prevented Garrow from signalling Rubio and the Sigillite.
"This will end on the enemy's terms," Garrow thought sourly. "They have the numbers, and this fortress was built for concealment, not strength."
But the horror here had only just begun. Where the dead had fallen, Garrow saw the maggots boring into the still-warm corpses, and his lip curled in disgust. At first he thought the vile creatures were making a meal of the dead, but then one of the bodies shook like a victim of palsy and began to move again. The head of a fallen guardsman lolled forward as he dragged himself up. His jaw wide open, a thick maggot head emerged through his mouth and probed at the air. Others of the fallen twitched and reanimated. Sickened, Garrow turned, hoping he would not see what he knew had to come next. He was not granted that respite. Mesa Varan's broken body was already on its feet, and beneath the flesh of the dead World Eater's legionary, fat, serpentine shapes pulsed and shifted as they consumed him from the inside out. Before Garrow could utter a warning, the shambling non-dead broke into a chaotic pell-mell sprint, virtually hurling itself at the nearest of the defenders, Garviel Loken. Engaged in a firefight, Loken did not see the dead man hurtling towards him until he was unable to evade the attack. Garrow spun Libertas in his hand, shifting his weight to break into a run, ready to aid the younger legionary. But then a dark mass conglomerated out of the corner of his eye, a black buzzing cloak upon the shoulders of a mutant.
"Do you turn your back on me, Captain?"
droned the Lord of Flies.
"You have yet to pay your debt."
The rusted blade of the plague knife plunged for Garrow's throat, and he parried it, razor-sharp flecks of splintered metal breaking off at the impact and splitting the air. For now, Loken was on his own. His attacker had no weapons in his hands, and that was what saved Loken in the first seconds of the attack. Had there been blades, the matter would have ended differently. The maddened, shambling thing that had been Mesa Varan held its mouth open in a silent scream. The legionary's head lay cocked at a terrible angle, the bones of his neck ground to fragments in the claws of the creature that had killed him. A wild torrent of punches rained down on Loken, each one hitting with force enough to stagger him. Reflexively, he tried to disengage, but the dead man would not relent and kept up the blows, robbing Loken of the ability to do anything but react. He kept his guard up, unable to find the space for a sword strike, instead flashing back to the rote training drilled into him through countless hours in dueling cages and fighting rings. Loken weathered the hits, holding on for the moment when his opponent tired or hesitated, but Varan, or whatever was left of him, did not. It was only when Loken's attacker suddenly changed tactics that he was able to snatch a heartbeat to act. Varan's blood-caked gauntlets went from punches to clawing and clutching, the metal fingers grabbing at any exposed seam of Loken's battle armour, twisting and tearing as he tried to rip it open. Locked in a violent embrace, their faces barely a hand's span apart, Loken stared into the dead man's dimmed gaze and saw a mindless animal snarling back at him. Bloated serpentine things slithered in the crop of Varan's reanimated flesh, driving the body forward on violent impulse. It was a dishonour for a warrior to be used like this, becoming a vessel for raw insanity. That thought had barely taken shape in Loken's mind before he recalled the shadow of another soul lost to unspeakable rage. His own.
Varen!
He shouted the World Eater's name.
Mesa!
Loken struggled, wrestling with the other warrior.
Are you still in there, cousin?
Once, Loken had fallen into the pit of madness and lost himself there. He felt a strange, powerful jolt of empathy for the former World Eater's legionary, and with it, the shame at being forced to witness this degradation. Varen's gauntlets snatched at Loken's chestplate, snagging on his ammunition bandolier, then found his throat and began to squeeze. Steel and chitin sparked from one another as Garrow and the Lord of Flies set to their melee. It was difficult for Libertas to find purchase on the creature's armoured hide, and the blades skipped off the curved shell of bony matter, gouging out black chips but losing the angle to make a deeper cut. Garrow fought to deflect the foe's plague-ridden dagger, knocking it aside time and again. He knew that it would only take the slightest nick of the polluted weapon's edge to foul his bloodstream with the profane chimeric infection lurking upon it. The Lord of Flies buzzed and cackled, enjoying the play of the fight, goading him.
"What do you want here, fiend?"
Garrow shouted.
"Why do you plague me again and again?"
"I am a harbinger of the Octed,"
it replied.
"But in truth, it gives me pleasure to torment you, Deathguard."
The creature's giant claw hand clacked together in a constant metronomic rhythm as it tried, almost of its own accord, to grasp Garrow's sword and turn it out of his grip.
"He is close," droned the swarm voice. "Very close now."
Garrow did not answer, but he instinctively knew who the creature was referring to. Mortarion, the Reaper of Men. The Primarch of the Death Guard and Garrow's turncoat brethren would be at the forefront of Horus's invasion of terror. It was an inevitability. The 14th Legion were the inexorable hammer, falling hard in every war they had ever fought, and this one would be no different.
"He has already accepted the mark,"
said the creature.
"There is still time, Nathaniel. You can return to your Legion. You can rejoin us."
"My legion is dead,"
Garrow spat back, jamming his sword into lock against the claw, his other hand holding off the dagger.
"Death means nothing to those blessed by the Grandfather. You have seen that with your own eyes. You see it before you now."
The mutant's foul breath curdled in the cold.
"Straight arrow, Garrow. Always apart, even when you were a battle captain. But when the Legion emerges reborn, all those old divisions will be swept away forever. Terran and Barbarin, Dusk Raider and Death Guard, traitor and loyalist. Those terms will mean nothing. They will all be united under the mark. The three, the seven, the whole."
The creature struggled to disengage, but Garrow held firm.
"We will never know weakness. We will never die."
"All things must die,"
said Garrow. And as he uttered the words, it was as if a great weight detached from his soul.
"That is how we measure what we are, what we do."
He gritted his teeth.
"The struggle only matters if we are mortal."
Humming laughter surrounded him, the fetid hissing glee of the Lord of Flies crawling over Garrow's exposed skin.
"Ah, I will grant the mercy of killing you myself, Nathaniel. It will be a gift, for if not I, it will be his hand that claims you, and that would be an eternity of pain."
The claw pressed forward, slow and relentless, pushing Libertas back against Garrow's exposed neck.
"I have seen that darkness,"
Loken forced out the words, each syllable an effort.
"I have been in the place beyond death."
Varen's hands trembled as they closed ever tighter, and the squirming forms beneath his skin seemed to go into a kind of frenzy. Congealing blood oozed from the dead man's nostrils and wept in black rivulets from the corners of his eyes.
There is no disgrace in the fear of that void.
Loken dug into memories he wished never to face again, letting the truth of his words be strengthened by the recollection. On Istvan III, he had died, or as near as be damned, and in the madness of it rose again as the broken soul called Cerberus. Mesa Varen had been there. He had seen Loken at his worst, his lowest ebb, when he was fit only to be put down like some crazed wild animal.
"Do you remember?"
he choked. A scream, deep and primal, more the roar of a fatally wounded predator than a human, tore itself free of Varen's scarred lips in a bloody froth, and he released Loken in a jerking spasm of motion. Before the knight-errant could stop it from happening, Varen ripped Loken's bandolier off his armour, pulling a handful of crack grenades from it. Bellowing, raging, biting and thrashing at himself, Varen staggered away. He clutched the rattling grenades to his chest in a strangely protective manner, even as the fat maggots eating him alive sensed the danger and burst forth. Slick with legionary blood, the eyeless things emerged from his skin and keened like sirens. The arming pins from the grenades all came free at once, and Varen fell to his knees, fighting to complete his last act as a warrior of the Imperium of Man. Loken raised his arm to shield his face and sank low as the rippled detonation blasted a crater in the frost-rimed ground, marking the World Eater's sacrifice with a storm of fire.
Submit!
The command beat at Garrow, coming from all directions at once. He hardened his heart against the droning voice.
"Accept the mark!" it shrieked. "Take the cups! One last time, drink deep, and know true power."
He stiffened, strengthening his stance as best he could, but Garrow's augmetic leg was starting to vibrate as the servos were overtaxed. If the metal failed him, the Lord of Flies would impale him on his own sword, and the end Garrow so desperately sought would be lost.
"No, I will not accept that. I will not fall here. If you refuse, you will perish in agony undreamt of,"
it told him.
"When you fled like a coward, every warrior you left behind in the 7th Great Company was punished for your transgression. Reviled and hated they were. Your castigation will be the same, magnified 1,000-fold. Damn you!"
Garrow snarled, recalling the faces of those legionaries. He knew that not every one of them would have been swift to fall to Horus's rebellion, and to know that those resolute sons had suffered in his stead cut him to the core.
"And damn Mortarion for walking a path that I will never follow! So be it!"
The Lord of Flies shrouded the sky with its swarm cloak, moving in for the kill.
"Die, knowing your defiance means nothing. Your shambling corpse will be fodder for the cannons."
"Garrow!"
He heard the cry from Loken, and from the corner of his eye he saw a blur of bright metal as the other knight-errant hurled his blade into the air, sending it across the distance between them.
"Defiance is everything,"
Garrow retorted, and in a savage burst of motion, he used his full reserves of will to force away the creature's dagger hand. His hyper-boosted inhuman reflexes enabled Garrow to snatch the thrown sword from the air before it fell beyond his grasp, and the momentum of the motion transferred into a narrow, fast swing. The pace of the fight, briefly locked in steel, now opened wide, and to Garrow's advantage, Lipitas flicked up, and Loken's blade came down over it to form a cross with the Lord of Flies trapped between its axes. The creature tried once more to stab him, but Garrow did not hesitate and closed the swords as if they were a set of shears. The head of the freakish beast was thrown into the air on a jet of oily vitae and into the screaming mass of its attendant swarm. And yet it did not die. The decapitated body stumbled away, the great claw clutching at nothing, the plague dagger jabbing at empty air in mad repetition of the body's last actions.
"End it!"
snarled Garrow, as Loken and Galor came around to flank him, their bolters rising to the ready. The other knights-errant opened fire on full automatic setting, committing an overkill salvo of mass-reactive rounds into the thing. The corpus of insects and filth that made up its form were obliterated, along with the corrupted remnants of whatever remained of poor Merrick Voyen. The rooming boom of gunfire echoed for long seconds over the tainted wilderness, drowning out the panicked howls of the surviving attackers and the endless buzzing of the constant swarm. Garrow speared Loken's sword into the ground and left it for him, marching to the great blackened smear on the snow where gobbets of torn, despoiled flesh lay strewn about. Seared, weeping maggots and colonies of crawling things slithered away as he approached. They congregated around the remains, and the swarm's metal grinder scream grew in pitch as it came down in a mass. For a moment, Garrow thought the insects were eating what was left. But then the fleshy rags swelled and burst open with new, sudden growth. The killing ground became a garden of diseased meat, sinew and budding bone, pieces of it slipping together like the parts of a puzzle made from butcher block offal. Questing strands of sinew found one another and pulled tight.
"It's forming again!"
he shouted, fatigue and disgust warring with his resignation and his anger.
"I won't have that," said Malkador.
The sigillite emerged through the smoke and haze to stand beside Garrow, walking awkwardly with his staff in motion, as if it were pulling him forward. Behind him, Garrow saw Galor and Loken greeting Rubio as he walked from the great gate at the White Mountain's base. The librarian seemed haunted, but his comrade's bearing was not of the greatest import at this moment. Garrow looked back and saw that the reassembly of the creature was taking true shape, amassing a torso, an arm, and the beginnings of a head. Malkador gave him a sideways look.
"I would advise you to shield your eyes."
He stepped one pace ahead of the knight-errant and lowered his staff so that the burning basket atop it pointed towards what was left of the enemy. It happened without sound. Or perhaps it was a side effect, an inversion of the laws of nature created by the colossal discharge of such arcane elemental forces. The light of a miniature star burned in the basket atop Malkador's staff, emerging in a blinding stellar radius around the sculpted golden aquila at its centre. The overpressure made the scars on Garrow's face ache like they were freshly cut. Then the noiseless wave of absolute energy burst outward, washing across the wastelands and destroying whatever it touched. The swarm, the lamprey maggots and their half-resurrected master, became brief charcoal sketches against the whiteness, and whatever twisted spirits inhabited them were thrown back into the warp. The lackeys who had swallowed the propaganda of Horus's agents and the Alpha Legion's corruptors were atomized in the same nuclear fire, and what remained of the crashed aeronefs boiled into plasmatic vapour along with them. At length the light died, and the stabbing pain in Garrow's vision gradually abated. Despite the nictitating membranes in his genhanced eyes, he ruefully accepted that he should have heeded Malkador's warning. Blinking away the purple smears of after-image on his retinas, he looked out and saw the landscape denuded of ice and snow. Before him now was a barren zone, the liquefied granite like heaps of molten black wax, sizzling and settling as rain began to fall from the sky.
"I didn't kill it," Malkador told him with a weary sigh. "I've learned that you can't eradicate them. Not really. Not in the sense that a warrior would understand."
Garrow jutted his chin at the black iron staff.
"Give me a weapon like that and I'll try, as many times as I need to."
"It's more of a tool than a weapon," said the sigillite, before he caught himself and fell silent, showing a thin smile.
He started again.
"We are finished here, and we should court no further delay. You and the others will return with me to the Imperial Palace."
Malkador turned back towards the mountain.
With luck, the rest of the incursions will have been put down by the time we land.
The rest of them?
Garrow looked back at the cooling, crackling stone. Oh, do try to keep up, Nathaniel.
Garrow scowled and fell in step with the sigillite. He nodded towards the gate.
I take it you found the answers you needed.
For the first time, Garrow noticed the dried blood marring the front of Malkador's robes. He could smell the faint odour of it, his olfactory senses picking out the particular scent of human vitae.
Don't concern yourself, replied the sigillite. The matter is concluded.
And the sisters?
Their battle is ended. The War Master has played his last shrouded pieces before committing to the endgame, at the cost of their lives. We are walking through his final gambit.
Garrow couldn't stop himself from looking up into the grey sky.
He's on his way.
Well, that has been true for 7 hard years, Malkador noted. Longer than that, even.
Garrow's gaze fell and found Rubio. The Psyker turned away, but not so swiftly that he didn't see that haunted look again.
What happened in there?
I told you not to concern yourself.
Malkador raised his voice to be heard over the rumble of thruster jets as the slate-grey Thunderhawk descended from the White Mountain's landing bay to touch down beside them. Garrow kept watching Rubio.
I know a grave wound when I see it.
He's more resilient than you give him credit for, said the sigillite,
as the aircraft's drop ramp fell open.
You all are. That's why you were chosen.
The flight passed in the blurry, time-shifted state of the catalepsian phase, as Rubio allowed his brain implant to enter the half-woke state that was a legionary's closest approximation of sleep. Eternally conscious, it was in this demi-aware mode that he rested and gathered himself. Partly, Rubio entered the trance because his body was fatigued, and he had learned through bitter experience to snatch rest wherever he could. But he also dropped away from his fellow knight's errant so he could look inward and probe the gap in his memory. The void was seamless and perfect, so firmly threaded into the weave of his experiences that it appeared as if it had always been there. Already Rubio found himself subconsciously accepting the new pattern of memories, and he had the unpleasant feeling that in days from now he would not see anything amiss at all. Malkador's bright telepathic presence hovered on the edges of his preternatural sense, a far sun in an inconstant sky. He had no means to prove that the sigillite had done something to him back at the White Mountain. But in a strange way, that absence of evidence was the proof. Only a near-sublime psyche as powerful as Malkador's could have re-sculpted a consciousness and left virtually no trace. Rubio thought about the missing moments and wondered what else the sigillite might have taken, or left behind. His sense of time shifted, returning to normal synchrony, and Rubio absorbed the conversations going on around him as multiple voices overlapped across the vox channels. The war to come had touched places other than the White Mountain. Reports of insurrectionist supporters, fifth columnists, and sapper attacks filled the communications net. Some of the flashpoints were low-scale affairs left to the Imperial Army, the Adeptus Arbites, or local city watches to deal with, riots that metastasized out of so-called peaceful demonstrations against the strictures put in place by Lord Dawn's edicts of defence and the like. But others had the character of carefully planned sabotage and covert strikes. There had been armed assaults on the starports of the Nihon Archipelago, running battles on the Atalantic Scarp, terrorist bombings in half a dozen hive cities. And amid these conventional attacks, there were reports of the uncanny and the impossible. Everyone spoke of the flies, swarms appearing where none should have been possible. Months of searching for and neutralizing such things had given Rubio an ear for these phenomena. The tone of voice of common men confronted by unreal terrors had a particular cadence that he had learned to listen for. These sort of engagements were where the knights errant were dispatched, but now, more than ever, Rubio was coming to the belief that their numbers and their weapons were not enough to stem the tide. The Thunderhawk landed hard on one of the palace's upper pads, and Rubio chose to be the last to disembark, prizing his silence. As he exited the ship, with the crew servitors trailing behind him, he took in the scene. Other ships of similar tonnage, along with bristling gunships and Aquila-class shuttles, were crowded on the pad, each besieged by a gang of minor mech adepts, busily patching damage or preparing the craft to go back out into the field. Armsmen in the carapace gear of the Chosen patrolled the edges of the great platform, facing out over the capped mountain, the elegant towers, and far below, the shanty city of the common folk. But what held Rubio's attention was the number of figures in Stormshade legionary battleplate, standing to attention as the Sigilite moved among them. In all the time since that fateful day on Kalth, the memory made him wince for some reason, Rubio had never seen more than four knights-errant in the same place at the same time. Along with himself, Loken, Garrow, and Galor, there were 11 of them. He had always suspected that there were more than he knew, of course, and in the past he had glimpsed warriors whose gait did not match those he was familiar with. He thought of the one he had seen leaving Malkador's chambers, and searched the unknowns, looking for commonality. A familiar face passed beneath his gaze. Vardas Ison gave him a solemn nod that communicated a whole series of intentions, and he returned it. Nearby, another knight-errant unhooded, and Rubio saw the motion of carved charms about his neck ring. Those were this warrior's sole keepsake, just as Rubio's was the Ultima emblazoned gladius he had been allowed to retain from his parent legion. The charms were a talisman, favoured by the so-called rune priests of Lord Russ's feral rout, and if that were not enough, the ashy rust colour of the warrior's ragged hair all but confirmed his origin as a child of Fenris. The former space wolf grinned at him as he stepped off the Thunderhawk's ramp.
"Brother Rubio!" "Well met."
"Jotun," he nodded.
"Or is it Coyus now?"
Rubio didn't answer the question.
"The lander, you crashed it into the traitor encampment and lived."
Jotun's grin widened.
"It'll take more than that to finish me."
"Oh, clearly."
Rubio thought about the silver coin Malkador had given him.
"Who did you used to be, brother?"
"Does it matter?"
Jotun nodded towards Malkador. The Sigilite was in hushed conversation with his adjutant, the tall, slight man called Wintour.
"I suppose not."
Rubio watched Wintour carefully. The thin human's eyes darted nervously from side to side when Malkador's attention was not upon him. Rubio had seen that agitation in him before, or at least he had seen it in someone who looked like A.L. Wintour, spoke like him. The mystery of the man sent Rubio's musings back to the gloom that troubled his own thoughts.
"The shadow attacks have been put down," announced Malkador,
pitching his voice so all of them could hear it.
"We were ready, and we were in place when Horus's lackeys triggered them. But these will not be the last. I have no doubt that other weapons and other poison lies in wait."
He took a breath and nodded to himself.
"But know this. These attacks are the tolls of a bell that sounds the beginning of the end. The plans and preparations that the insurrectionists have made are about to blossom. There will be fires, and there will be death. There will be confusion and panic in the streets. This and worse, before the War Master's ships blacken that sky."
Malkador pointed a bony finger into the air, walking back through the group. As he did, Rubio saw Wintour take the opportunity to slip away while his master was otherwise occupied.
"And what would you have us do about it?"
The question came from another of those warriors unknown to Rubio, but the pallid cast to his features and the sable of his half-shorn mane suggested that this one was of Lord Korax's legion.
"Nothing, Brother Ogun."
"Nothing at all."
Malkador paused, resting on his staff, taking in their faces.
"You should use this moment to rearm, repair your armour, and replenish what is depleted. This is the calm before the storm, and it will never come again."
"Calm?"
Garrow made no effort to keep the irritation from his voice. "Cities are aflame across the planet. The people are dying. The war is already here." Malkador did not answer. Instead, the reply came from a dark-eyed warrior who stood in the shadows beneath the wing of a shuttle.
"This is not the war, Death God. These are just the ripples ahead of the wave, lapping at the shoreline. You should look up. The flood tide will be so great and so vast, you may mistake it for the sky."
Rubio briefly considered the dark-eyed one through the lens of his psychic sight and frowned in confusion. The shape of the warrior's soul was off-kilter, a form that seemed to be sculpted from shards rather than born into a hole. He drew the other knight-errant's attention and instinctively withdrew, but not before he glimpsed the image of a silver coin and a word etched upon its surface, fading as it was said aloud. "Ianius." Garrow's expression turned stony and he walked away. The endless grinding weariness of this maddening half-war constantly dragged on his focus, forever threatening to pull him from the true path laid out before him. He took a long deep breath. Now was not the time to become subsumed into another of Malkador's labyrinthine schemes. What he required was the clarity of his faith and the strength that knowledge would bring. The sigilite continued to converse with the dark-eyed knight-errant and the others, but Garrow's thoughts were elsewhere. He moved to Galor's side, where the other warrior sat atop an arming crate, and spoke quietly so that only he would hear his words.
"Brother, I have need of you. I am familiar with that tone of voice."
Galor gave him a sideways glance.
"I heard it every time you tasked the Seventh Company to do something defiant."
Garrow smiled, despite himself.
"True. And we did defy the odds with such zeal."
"Aye, Captain. Those days are another life to me now."
The smile faded.
"To us both."
Galor looked away. Since returning to Terra, Garrow's former rank of battle captain had been reduced to little more than an honorific, and while he did hold the status of the sigilite's agentia primus, the unspoken rule was that no knight-errant truly outranked another. If Garrow gave Galor a command, he could not enforce it, except by invoking Malkador's proxy. But that point became moot when the other Death Guard nodded slowly.
"I do not forget. Tell me what you need, Captain. You will find what remains of the 70, our brothers who escaped treachery aboard the Eisenstein."
"Less now," Galor noted, "and not all may be on Terra. They were not chosen as we were."
"Gather who you can. Our last battle is almost upon us, Helig."
Galor gave a grim nod and glanced in Malkador's direction as the sigilite excused himself, leaving the assembled knights errant to attend to their preparations. Garrow shook his head, answering the unspoken question.
"This is not a matter for the regent to be concerned with. I ask you to do this not as your former captain, not as a knight errant. I ask as one Death Guard to another."
The other warrior stood up.
"Then it will be done."
Galor walked away without looking back. Gathering the battered material of his combat cloak around him, Garrow made for the gaping maw of a Nullgrav drop tube on the far side of the landing pad, deliberately avoiding the rest of the knight's errant. However, there was no way around Rubio, who stood waiting at the edge of the platform as if he had expected him.
"You are looking for something," said the Psyker,
and Garrow felt the gentle pressure of a telepathic probe. He gave Rubio a warning glance.
"Keep your own counsel, Tylos. There is much about you I have never understood, Nathaniel. The hidden places in your thoughts."
Rubio folded his arms across his chest.
"And questions unresolved. It seems those are falling like rain in these hours."
Unbidden, the memory of a dead soldier's votive charm A golden aquila upon a chain rose in Garrow's mind. Was that Rubio's doing, or something else? He hardened his resolve.
I have never challenged you, Codicea. Do me the same honour.
How can I challenge what you believe in? Rubio replied. The Emperor protects, yes? How can such a statement be assailed by any one of us? Garrow pushed past him and stepped onto the elevator platform. He left a warning in his wake.
Look to yourself, brother. Soon, there will be no respite to do so.
But Rubio could not end the conversation without one final push into Garrow's surface thoughts, snatching his intentions from the ether.
You are going to the deep dungeon, Tears.
Who do you hope to find there? Garrow said nothing, and let the darkness take him down and away. A.L. Wintour's hands were shaking so much that he almost dropped the cipher key, and it took a physical effort for the adjutant to slow his racing breath to the point where his mind had clarity. He laughed bitterly at that as he padded across the central atrium of the Sigilite's chambers, skipping from one ornamental rug to another as he tried to fox the sensing globes drifting up in the eaves. Clarity. The mere suggestion that he had something like that was ridiculous. If anything, Wintour's thoughts were thickening, gaining a fog of confusion that became more opaque with each passing moment.
If only they knew. If only I could say, he muttered to himself.
He glanced in the direction of the great arched window visible through the open door to the bedroom, and a blunt, suicidal impulse juddered through his body. A barrage of harsh, invasive thoughts struck him. Wintour imagined suffocating in the red silk sheets of that bed, releasing control of himself and thrashing wildly until he asphyxiated, smashing a hole in the glaceic window with a chair and diving out of it, stabbing himself in the heart with one of the antique knives in the dining room, tasting the metal of a lasgun's muzzle on his tongue before squeezing the trigger stud, swallowing the ink from Malkador's study in volume enough to be poisoned by it, hurling himself off the edge of the Eagle's Highway. He screamed and slapped his own face, the sounds rebounding off the carved walls. Wintour gulped and hugged himself, fearful that his outburst might have set off some kind of alarm. But there was no siren. So he moved on, shaking his head, struggling to return to his previous train of thought.
What would the people say if they knew what I know?
He asked the silent air.
What if they could see the truth behind the insurrection?
Wintour felt the tears coming.
Why did I have to be told? Why did he have to tell me?
He took a shuddering breath, and there was the scent of rich Amasek on the air, a rare vintage. He had shared a glass of it with Malkador the night before. No, that was not correct. Not last night. Months ago. Or was it years? Wintour clasped his face, the stolen cipher key pressing into his thin flesh. This was not how it was supposed to happen. In his ideal, perfect version of this plan, the Sigilite would still be away at the White Mountain, gone for another day at least. Wintour would have more time. But things had become complex. He had underestimated how long it would take him to get the key, to fabricate the permissions, and get into Malkador's inner sanctum without being detected. The memories of years of serving the Sigilite, or was it months, gave him all the tools he needed. It was only the application that he had misjudged. Then, what now? He skidded to a halt in front of the doors to the grand study. The sensor grid would let him in here without comment, but still he hesitated.
I can still run. Flee and flight, yes.
The idea formed, but then it broke beneath another jagged bolt of reality.
No. No, they'll find me before I make it to a flyer. So I need to know.
He steeled himself and entered the study.
I needed to know. I won't go back.
Malkador invited him into this chamber only rarely, and at first it had been something Wintour enjoyed. At first he had enjoyed all of their conversations. The Sigilite was learned, diverting company, and his vast collection of art and literature was compelling to Wintour's questing mind. They would talk, they would play regicide, and they would engage over Amasek and speak of things that could not be discussed elsewhere at first. But looking backward from here, Wintour now understood it had been an elegant gilded trap, no different from any of Malkador's other schemes.
"Why am I surprised by that?"
he said to himself, navigating around the great hololithic tables and reading lenses, between the paintings that floated on suspensers like mystic portals that had been cut loose to drift where they wanted.
Why did I think he would treat me any differently?
A cloying, overpowering sense of the inevitable seeped into Wintour's every action, clinging to him as if it were the stench of fire smoke. Burning himself alive in the kitchen, dousing his body in Amasek and striking the tip of a low stick. His hands still trembling, he found the place where the hidden door lay and pressed the cipher key to the stone column. For a moment nothing happened, and Wintour felt a blind panic forming, but then the column groaned and retracted, revealing a passageway behind it. Cold, dry air wafted out, bringing with it the stringent odour of cleaning chemicals. He ventured in, the cold of the metal flooring leaching the warmth through the soles of his thin leather shoes. Past the point of no return, Wintour was sick with dread as he advanced. He did not want to be here. He did not want any of this. But there was no way to travel back to that day in the gardens, to the moment when they had first spoken. The offer of the game and a glass of Venusian wine. If only he could take that back. Another bitter laugh.
He would never have let me say no.
Wintour's voice echoed off the narrow walls. Up ahead, the corridor widened into a laboratory space, filled with automata and Medicaid devices from the lost stage of technology. Spidery brass things and white ceramic constructs worked quietly and diligently at knots of decayed fetal flesh afloat in sterile chambers. The dry, chill atmosphere of the room, the hard, directionless white light of it, the whispering machines, all these elements conjured an abject terror in Wintour that was like nothing he had ever experienced before. It was primal and inchoate and inescapable, as if woven into his very being. He stumbled into the wall and vomited explosively.
I've never been in this room before. Why am I so afraid of it?
He had barely finished retching before a servitor machine detached from a wall socket and approached, stooping to clean up the mess. Dizzy and terrified, Wintour forced himself to press on. Soon Malkador would be done tending to his knight's errand and his chosen, and then he might return here. The truth was in this room. Wintour took that as an unbreakable article of faith. Why else had the sigillite kept everything else but this from him? Malkador had confessed so many terrible things and revealed so many awful truths to Wintour that the adjutant feared the secrets he had been told had unseated his reason.
"A lesser man might have gone mad to know them," he said between gasps. "I think perhaps I have."
Malkador had unburdened his soul to Wintour, over and over forcing the man to share the worst of him. It was so ordinary a thing to do. At once it made Wintour pity the sigillite and hate him in equal measure. In the middle of the chamber he came upon a stasis capsule, and inside was the body of a naked male humanoid. But not a human, no. It had been old before the suspension field had captured it in a bubble of null time, holding the corpse on the edge of decay by disrupting the forces of nature. Thousands of filament-thin probes penetrated the pale flesh of the body, and clear glass rods held it up as if it were floating in hazy water. The body in the capsule was unnaturally tall, but not like that of someone born in low grav, someone like Wintour, not like someone who had been bio-altered, but a form born that way. Its aspect was all stiff angles and arrow-sharp eyes that were long since clouded by death, elongated ears that had no soft curves to them, strange thin lobes that tapered to points. The body had elegance and grace in it, if viewed from one angle, harsh, unkind, and alien features when seen from another. But the most disturbing fact about it was that the body had Wintour's face.
Ah!
In a single exhalation, Malkador gave up a lifetime of regret and frustration.
You shouldn't have done this.
Shuddering as he began to weep, Wintour could barely form the words to speak as he turned and found the sigilite standing in the corridor behind him. His favourite trick, to make it seem as if he were everywhere and nowhere at once. Wintour sputtered out a question.
Are you actually here?
Does it matter?
Malkador rolled back his hood, and Wintour saw that his robes no longer had dried blood on them.
This is the worst ending. It's rare you ever come this far.
He sighed again.
I'm sorry. This is not what I want.
But that is...
Wintour screamed the question, waving wildly at the body in the capsule.
A Xenos specimen.
Malkador's tone became that of a lecturer.
Eldari. I found him in the webway, in the underspaces beneath what you would think of as the Imperial Palace now. That was a long time ago. He was still alive then, but his essence, his soul, if you will, was blighted and fading.
The sigilite showed a brittle smile.
But you know me, dear friend. I'm never one to waste a resource.
Why does it look like me?
Shouted Wintour. Malkador made a turning motion with his fingers.
You have it backward.
No.
The sound Wintour made was very small and very fragile.
No.
The sigilite studied him gravely.
Fate marks us, I think. Because you chose this moment, this exact day to break. Not a week ago, not tomorrow, when it would not matter, but today.
He made a bitter grunting sound.
If things were different, I could explain it all to you. Carefully, delicately. But Horus's clock has robbed me of any grace in this.
Malkador shook his head.
This must be how Dawn feels every minute of every day. Stressed to the limit before a wall forever on the verge of splintering.
Why is it me?
Wintour insisted, only half understanding.
Do you remember where you were born, Aiel?
Malkador's tone hardened.
Do you recall the names of your parents, your siblings, the place where you grew up?
Of course.
The question was ridiculous. He reached for the memory and found only sand. Nothing but the shape of what should have been there. An empty vessel that should have contained a man's past.
Why don't I...
Those things do not exist. That is why you never dwell on them or speak of them. Your mind has been conditioned not to think too hard about a history you never had.
The sigilite nodded towards the dead alien.
It took a long time to understand the structure of their genetic material, but adaptation was possible. He was dying when I discovered him, you understand? But even in those moments, I realized what kind of being I had found. A kindred spirit. Something nigh immortal, with an intellect I could actually spar with.
He sighed.
So few can match me. Can you blame me for wanting someone to talk to? A confidant to keep me sane?
How can I be a part of that?
Wintour retorted.
I'm human.
His stomach churned at the thought of Xenos blood coursing through his veins.
Not completely,
said the sigilite.
Where he ends and you begin, the line is blurred.
Why have you done this? What is the point of this foolish charade?
Wintour's mood rebounded towards giddy anger.
I am sick of your needlessly complex games.
There are no lies in this place. We have no time for them.
Malkador leaned in.
I made you so I would have a voice that was not an echo of my own. Stripped the alien from that corpse, merged it with something more akin to man. And you've been that for a long time, Aiel. A good friend. Haven't we been good friends?
Wintour screamed.
I don't want to hear your voice any more. Why did you keep telling me things? All the secrets and horrible truths about this war, and all the ones to come afterwards. Why confess them to me? I don't want the burden.
He beat at his chest.
I can't contain them.
I know,
said Malkador. "And that is why you killed yourself so many times. Hundreds of you, seeking death rather than live with what I told them. Another secret I kept."
Hundreds?
Wintour trembled, unable to believe what he was hearing.
"I regret it."
The Sigilite said the words like he meant them.
"But my need was greater than yours. Even I cannot carry my duty alone. So you helped me, my friend. You gave the Keeper of Terror's secrets a place where he could put aside his mask, even for a brief time, and confide."
He bowed his head.
"I know the toll is great, but you have my deepest gratitude."
"Each time? What did you do?"
Wintour glared at the capsule.
"Make another? Slice off a piece and grow me in a vat?"
"In a way," admitted Malkador. "But each iteration fades faster than the one before it. You are a copy of a copy of a copy. Degrading. The stability quotient is past the point of no return, down to mere days."
Wintour seized on those words.
"Am I the last? I am the last!"
As soon as he said it, he knew he was right.
"That's why you're here. Because you can't make any more."
"Wait,"
said Malkador. And he glanced over his shoulder down the narrow corridor.
"I'll be there soon. Just wait, and I'll take this away from you. Give you back some peace."
"I don't want that!"
Wintour advanced on the Sigilite, and now he saw that Malkador cast no shadow on the floor from the harsh lights above. An imago, then. A projection of his reality. He knew he had only moments until the illusion became the fact. Casting around, Wintour found a metal stool near a cogitator console and hauled it off the ground, wielding it like a club.
"Stop!"
Malkador's voice became a thunderous roar, but Wintour had already committed to the act. He battered the capsule with savage mad fury, shattering the crystal flex walls. A gush of glutinous preservative fluids rolled out across the metal decking and brought the body of the long-dead Eldari out with it. As the air touched the alien corpse's skin, it instantly decayed, becoming a grey, pulpy mess. Wintour attacked the remains, stamping the flesh matter beneath his shoes.
"This is not me! This is not me!"
He stumbled and collapsed in the pool of thick sludge, falling on jagged curves of broken crystal flex. Instinctively, he grabbed the largest shard and held it to his throat.
"I won't be used by you anymore!"
"That choice is not yours."
Another iteration of Malkador stormed into the chamber, even as the one Wintour was conversing with faded like a mirage. This Sigilite was hard-eyed, and there was blood on his robes. The shadow he cast fell across Wintour and made the air in the laboratory turn polar cold. He tried to move the makeshift crystal flex dagger, but his body was frozen in place.
"Let me die!"
Wintour forced out the words through his rigid jaw.
"You have no right. How much more? How many more secrets do you have to admit?"
"An infinity of them,"
said Malkador, one hand on his iron staff as he lowered himself into a crouch.
"But I no longer require a confessor."
He reached out and took the glassy fragment from Wintour's hand and threw it away.
"You are needed for something else."
The Sigilite laid his long fingers over the planes of Wintour's face and closed his eyes. Ethereal light glowed beneath his flesh and seeped out, illuminating Wintour's skull from within. The adjutant began to scream.